Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series. Me, Spencer Miller, very pleased to be joined by my co-host and partner in the Isolation Series once again, Paul Fields. And Paul, it is Tuesday, February 6th, 2024, and let's dive right in. I've been raring to go and talk to you about this for the last, you know, few days since we came on the air. And that is, on Friday night, at the end of WWE SmackDown, we pretty much got confirmation that The Rock is now going to be involved in WrestleMania 40. And although the pop for The Rock, as per usual, is pretty good when his music first hits, the amount of backlash, rightfully so, from the fans and from pundits alike and from the media has just been unbelievable since then. And like I said, it is justified, in my opinion, largely, because I'm not taking anything away from The Rock. We're not taking anything away from The Rock. But to put out a statement saying that you feel or you felt necessary to save WrestleMania when Brock Lesnar was pulled off of Royal Rumble and his WrestleMania plans, and when CM Punk tore his tricep, And when Seth Rollins hurt his knee, they're still hoping that Seth Rollins can come back, obviously. That's why he's still been on TV doing mic spots over the last couple weeks. But all that being said, it's really unfortunate that The Rock and the WWE largely feels like at 52 years of age, he needs to come in there and quote-unquote save WrestleMania. We've talked on so many occasions recently on this program saying that they have done a great job once again, finally getting to a place where they've built up both rosters and it's fairly strong overall. And now bringing in The Rock just really is dumb, because even if they announce a swerve, which they can, where Roman faces The Rock necessarily on Saturday, and then the winner gets Cody on Sunday, and that way they could do that. That would be interesting. I'm not taking anything away from that. But seemingly to me, that's the only way you can save face here and make sure that everybody's happy, including Cody Rhodes, who, as I told you off air when all of this happened, I gained even more respect for going out there and being the professional that he is and that he was doing that promo when he found out just a couple hours earlier.
I think that there's a lot to unpack here. And we have to remember always when we're talking about the world of professional wrestling that we are living in an entertainment industry that is entirely built on trying to fool or work the fans, right? To elicit your emotion so that they can get the ultimate, you know, expression of happiness, sadness, whatever it might be. I think the biggest problems that I see with the decision and the way that this was designed was the backlash out there, I don't think is towards The Rock. I don't think it's towards the match of Rock versus Roman. I think that the match is something that everybody that enjoys pro wrestling, I think, would be very excited to see. The problem is the way that they've gone about it. They've put, you know, they told the fans for the last 2 years to invest in and believe in Cody Rhodes. And they've talked to us about him, you know, quote unquote, finishing the story. So I think as a fan of any entertainment product, you just want to be rewarded for enjoying the product. You want a, you know, a payoff for any storyline that you've been following. And I think that in wrestling and in sports entertainment, the fans will turn on any performer at any time if they feel like they can't invest in them. So to have, by all accounts, by the reporting that we're hearing now, this Rock performing at WrestleMania 40 was part of his deal to join the board at TKO. Why on earth you would have had Cody Rhodes win the Royal Rumble only to hand his spot away to The Rock? Again, we're talking storyline because we don't know necessarily yet. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then if you flip to the reality side of it, as a fan, you're thinking this feels eerily similar to what The Rock did to CM Punk many years ago and the decisions they made there. What people like Hulk Hogan did to many an athlete, what we know John Cena's done to people. So look, wrestling is a cutthroat industry when it comes to being at the top, and there's a lot of ego and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of characters to balance and a lot of, charisma and arrogance and all of those things it takes to be at the top of an industry that's so bizarre as pro wrestling. But I just, you know, as someone who follows the product regularly, it was most disappointing because it really does feel like this is a decision that would have been made during the Vince McMahon era of WWE. And for the last, whatever, 18 months, Triple H, Paul Levesque has worked hard to create some trust in his storytelling. You know, let it play out. He's earned the right to see where the story goes. I just think that this story has been told very poorly to this point, that all the reports that we're hearing is that, you know, the thought was that Rock would come back and everybody would, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be people disliking Cody, but they definitely didn't think that people would dislike The Rock. And we're seeing the reaction now is pretty one-sided. Of course, people want to see The Rock. Of course, it's exciting to have him back. I just don't know why you tell the story you told up to this point if you knew at the beginning of the month in January that The Rock was going to take on Roman Reigns. I think that as fans and as people who enjoy this on a regular basis and regularly ingest this content, you could have told the story in several different ways that doesn't make you look silly. Because right now, whatever the WWE does now, that is reactionary, not proactive. And they're going to say, oh, we thought this was going to happen and we planned it this way and yada, yada, yada. Or not. Or they're just going to go through with The Rock and Roman and say, like, too bad. Hopefully you like Cody next time if we decide to give him the belt. So it's an uneasy feeling, and it's not particularly good storytelling from a brand that's been telling good stories for the better part of 2 years.
So here's a couple questions. Number one, what would you think if you were Cody in this situation? I mean, obviously he is an ultimate professional. I said that to start off the show, but it has to be a kick in the teeth of some sort based on what you just said about investing in the 2 year storyline and getting the fans behind it, which is very hard to do in today's day and age of wrestling. That had to be really, really disheartening a little bit initially for Cody, just hearing about it a couple hours ago, even though he knew it might have been a possibility right from jump. Also, because they have the WrestleMania kickoff press conference in Vegas on Thursday, we know that lots of fans are going to be there. We know it's going to be some type of a vitriol reaction based on what we've been seeing over the last few days. Like we said, could you see a scenario, like I said off the top as well, where you have Rock Roman on Saturday and winner faces Cody on Sunday? Or would they not do that in today's day and age, in your opinion? And also, conversely, based on the almost inevitable vitriol reaction by the fans that are coming on Thursday at the press conference, could you see a scenario where they both turn heel going into that match in some capacity? Because we know that The Rock has a propensity to go with the fan reaction and different things like that. We also know that he has a huge ego of sorts when it comes to things like this. So do you think that, like, he could start firing back at the audience if he continues to get this vitriol reaction?
I think that The Rock, I think that The Rock is probably more tuned in than others. I think that he'll know how to do that. But also, like, we have to remember, it's The Rock. If anybody can find a way to manipulate a crowd on the day of, on the time of the event, leading into an event, it's him, right? I think there's still a lot of goodwill towards it. People are trying to compare this to somebody like Daniel Bryan, right, in the Yes Movement and all of that. But if you think back to WrestleMania 30 and everything that happened leading up to that Daniel Bryan movement, WWE was offering us Batista versus Randy Orton, a matchup that we had seen countless times that was a little bit tired, a little bit, you know, played out. There wasn't a whole lot of new stories to tell there, and fans wanted something different, and they voiced that big time. Also, Daniel Bryan he didn't win the Royal Rumble. He wasn't the guy at the top of every card for the better part of 2 years. So it's a weird balancing act. This time around, it's very different because fans love Cody. He's legitimately the top babyface and has been able to hold that mantle for, again, 2 years of being back in the WWE. But the match that they're offering is Roman Reigns versus The Rock, which is a tremendous matchup, very fresh. I think a lot of wrestling fans want to see it. So it's hard to compare the two. My gut thinks that TKO and the WWE will just continue to be very stubborn, and what we're going to get is Rock versus Roman. I don't have any, like, The Rock hasn't worked in, you know, a number of years. Roman Reigns doesn't like to show up to two SmackDowns in a row. I don't see how you're going to get him to work two nights in a row. My gut tells me that it's going to be Rock and Roman, and the Cody fans are kind of going to have to eat it until they finish the story in another way, which I think is really dangerous with the momentum that Cody has built over the last 2 years. However, it's a long time till WrestleMania. We're talking about April. It's 2 months away. There's lots of stories they can tell. And if the fan reaction changes from we want this match, but we don't like how it got there, and it starts to move into we don't like The Rock and we don't care to see him, I think that that's when it will, when, you know, WWE might, you know, to use a Rockism, they might raise the people's eyebrow and start to think about the adjustment. The other thing is, again, we live in we are talking about an entertainment life form that thrives on telling people one thing and then giving them something else. So this all could be part of something, but by all the reporting that happens, Rock and Roman was as of Friday was supposed to be, you know, the main event, and it was going to be Seth Rollins versus Cody Rhodes. However, WWE does track these things pretty closely. I think that, you know, the overwhelming response towards Cody is something that is notable. And even watching Raw last night, they weren't shying away from the fact that people really do want Cody, while trying to bury the fact that people didn't want Rocky. But again, I don't think that's the case. I think people want The Rock. They just don't want it at the expense of Cody Rhodes.
And well, even Seth Rollins said it in the opening segment last night. They weren't expecting a Rocky sucks chant to come up the way that it did last night at the beginning of the show.
Sure, but I mean, it was a very small part of that audience. And I would say that the reality of the situation is that much of what we see online and much of the pushback you get to this is more about the wrestling fans. The general media, if you ask the general public who Dwayne The Rock Johnson is, versus who Cody Rhodes is, people are going to know The Rock over somebody like Cody. That's just the reality of the situation. And that's like, I think Cody Rhodes might be my favorite pro wrestler right now as we talk, you know, February 6th, 2024. He might be my favorite wrestler active at the moment.
He reminds me very much of a modern day Bret the Hitman Hart, who is one of your favorites of all time. Not to say technically that they're on the same level, but he's given off very much Bret the Hitman Hart vibes every time he comes into an arena when his music hits.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you're always gonna compare past the past, but as of right now, he's one of my favorites. But that doesn't mean that he's a star at the level of someone like The Rock. Right. So I understand where this is coming from. So we have to remember, too, that while WrestleMania excites and impassions the wrestling fan base, the everyday fans, it also attracts an audience that's outside of just the wrestling bubble. So I think you have to keep that in mind. But it's going to be really interesting. Like I said, we've got lots of time. We'll find out a little bit more on Thursday. They'll take another step in the story. You know, Triple H has earned the right to, you know, book his way in and out of this predicament, we'll say. So let's see how it goes. Let's see what the story is to be told. I will say that if it is Rock and Roman, while I'd be interested to see that match, there will be a larger part of me that is disappointed. It will feel like a step down if we're watching Rollins and Rhodes again. For a title that basically got buried on Friday night that nobody cares about, or fewer people care about, I should say. So they run the risk of sort of alienating one fan base to appease to a different fan base. It really is kind of a mess. I feel like WWE shot themselves in the foot a little bit here, and I don't think they ever expected this kind of reaction to The Rock in any way.
I also think it's kind of silly for Seth Rollins to go out there nowadays and do the promos that he's been doing about the title and things like that, when realistically that title's been in circulation for 7.5 months, 8 months, and is not the world heavyweight belt that people knew that was around the waist of his dad, Dusty Rhodes, and Ric Flair and so many others for so many years, including Triple H when he was in Evolution and Batista and a whole bunch of different things. If we were talking about that version of the belt, I can understand his promos a lot more than a belt that has been in circulation seemingly for 7 months. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, I mean, it was pretty transparent why they created this title. And I actually don't agree in a way. Seth Rollins has worked really hard to make this title matter. And I think that, you know, through the work that they've done with belts like the Intercontinental title and the U.S. title, it's easier to take this belt seriously because of the way it's been treated. Now, that doesn't mean that it's on the level of the Roman Reigns title, of the one that WWE will always put at the top of the card, because it's the one that they claim for it to have lineage back to Bruno and back to, you know, Hogan and all of those guys, right? So we know that regardless of who's running the ship, WWE takes their history more seriously than the history of wrestling at large. And so their title will always be the prestige title. That doesn't necessarily mean that the other one is meaningless. It is a step down. That's the reality of the way that they book both these titles.
Right. And again, I think it largely has to do with the fact that even though they are calling it the world heavyweight belt, it's not the belt that has the lineage that we just talked about. If it had that history of, you know, the Ric Flairs and you know, all the different people that wore that belt for so many years and so many different iterations, then I could see the validity more believable behind it. But because this new version of the belt, although, like you said, Seth Rollins has worked really hard and been there week in and week out taking on different challengers and great matches and whatnot. I just, you can't believe a statement like that when he points to that belt and says, your dad, you know, gave this
disagree.
Belt.
I disagree, because here's why I disagree. It's narrative. They're building a narrative. You, the technically the title that's over Roman Reigns' shoulder, if we're talking about however many days now he's been the WWE champion, almost 4 years, he won the Universal title first. So he's only actually been a WWE champion technically for like 2 years or two and a half or whatever, which is still very impressive. But they are going to flex the narrative to one way or the other. When they brought back the heavyweight title, when they purchased WCW and they had the initial brand split, that you could say that wasn't the title that harkened back to Dusty and Flair and all of the NWA guys who held the big gold belt. That's all wrestling narrative. I honestly don't care at all. If you want to tell me, it looks like, it feels like you could easily attach the world heavyweight lineage to that belt based on the way that they are trying to portray it in the WWF's canon of, you know, of storytelling. I don't have any problem with that because it's wrestling. And honestly, it's entertainment. It doesn't really matter. All the belts end up, if you're talking about lineage of those titles, they all ended up in WWE. They're WWE devices to tell stories with. So that doesn't bother me even a little bit. And honestly, I think it's the only, like, the most interested I was in Rollins versus Rhodes would have been last Monday when Rollins cut that promo. It was a very good promo. So maybe hearkening back to some of those names that held a belt that looked very similar to that one, that stood for a lot of what Rollins' title stands for. You know, the guy that is on tour, the guy that defends it night after night, the guy that's on, you know, most every show. That to me is an easier story to tell than Cody, you know, walking out telling Roman he wants his belt, but not at WrestleMania, and then bringing The Rock out. It's a narrative plot device. I don't really mind if they use that. It's the only way that they could maybe evoke any emotion from someone like me anyway.
Right, and last but certainly not least, stick with me here, because I know I'm about to invoke quite some emotion from one Paul Shields with this next statement. I understand that, but talking about narrative and different ways that they can go with WrestleMania 40, now that The Rock is on the board and everything like that, and based on the reactions and whatnot, let's say they want to do a swerve and want to make people more happy so that Cody can finish the story, quote unquote, blah, 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 all the rest of that. You said that we have 2 months. Okay. I'm not saying that this is a good idea. I'm just saying that people would be super excited about it, good, bad, or indifferent. Okay. We know that for the last, you know, couple of years, WWE has tried a couple of different times now to get Stone Cold Steve Austin to come back and do another program similar to the program that he did for night one in Dallas for WrestleMania 38, where Kevin Owens, as well as Stone Cold Steve Austin, put on a great show for the fans at that particular point. And I know that Kevin Owens is a lot younger than The Rock and whatnot, and has been working on a regular basis and is a current talent. I know all of that, but just stick with me here. If you want to make the fans happy and you want to swerve them and everybody change the narrative in a positive direction, what about having some type of a match, like not a traditional match, obviously, but some type of a match between Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock? Because it would harken back some nostalgia and things like that. And whether it would be good or not, people would go nuts.
I don't think that bringing another former Attitude Era star back, even Stone Cold, is going to help this situation in any way. I also don't think that there is any match type, regardless of the smoke and mirrors, that could take place between The Rock and Steve Austin. Steve Austin's match with Kevin Owens was so great because of Kevin Owens. The Rock did his part perfectly and did a lot of, yeah, he played the role of, you know, badass, ass-kicking Stone Cold Steve Austin really well. It looked the way that it looked because of the way that Kevin Owens could bump and carry a match like that and accentuate the positives of a wrestler who just hasn't been in the ring for however long it had been. I think if you put two guys in the ring like that, like The Rock and Austin right now, you are asking for the fans to just completely annihilate the match. I just don't think that that's going to be the answer. I think
even if they did a tag match.
But again, when's the last time the WrestleMania main event was going to be a tag match? And again, think about The Rock. Think about the ego that we're dealing with here, right? You know, we do like The Rock, but he is not a man that's a void of ego. His last movie flopped hard. His show just got canceled. He's now a board member of the TKO. He's not coming back to WrestleMania to wrestle in a tag team match. That's just not it. We're talking about a guy who believes he is quote-unquote saving WrestleMania. I just don't see that happening.
Right. What movie was it that flopped recently?
Black Adam.
Oh, yes. Yes. So much so that they canceled any subsequent sequel plans that they had, because apparently they had, like, I believe at least two sequels planned, and then they just scrapped all of it.
Yeah. So for a guy that has a very healthy ego, and look, I'm not saying that as a negative thing, but by all accounts, he wanted this match and he lobbied hard for it. And now, you know, here we are having to deal with a fallout that I don't know that him or WWE truly expected.
Right. Switching from WWE for a moment, I want to get your thoughts on the city of Toronto hosting this past weekend's NHL All-Star festivities. By all accounts, it was very positive. Admittedly, I didn't watch very much of it because, as I've said on this program many times, I'm not a fan of All-Star games in general, other than the dunk contest and maybe the three-point contest, which even in recent years has been tremendously watered down, in my opinion. But like I said, from all accounts, it was a very positive weekend for the city of Toronto and the NHL All-Star game. They liked what they did in terms of tweaks for some of the events in the game itself and whatnot. Austin Matthews' team ended up winning the whole mini game situation, and he ended up being the NHL All-Star MVP. Surprise, surprise, they're not. But what are your thoughts on this past weekend's All-Star festivities back in our hometown of Toronto? Since, what was it, 2001 or 2000?
2000. 2000 was the last time it was there. I thought it was a good weekend. It was a fun weekend for the fans. It looked like the players had a pretty good time for what it was. It looks like the new format for the skills competition went over well. And yeah, I mean, the 3-on-3 games were fun enough. I thought that Toronto did a really good job, and it was nice to see Matthews get the game MVP. Of course, kind of a hometown choice, but again, it's an All-Star game. It's for the fans. It's an event that's designed to send everybody home happy, and I think that they accomplished that not only with the game, but with the events surrounding the game and everything that went on in the city to accompany the All-Star game. I think that it was a successful weekend for the NHL and for the Maple Leafs organization to be able to host an event like that.
May I ask you, what the heck was the incident with Nikita Kucherov, though? Because a lot of people were talking about that. I personally did not see it, but apparently he got booed and really didn't do any effort in some event that he was doing. Is that correct?
He just looked like he didn't want to be there for the skills competition and wasn't really putting in an effort. And he's playing in a rival building, right? Like, Kucherov has done some real serious damage to the Toronto Maple Leafs in playoff series and just in general. He's kind of a Leaf killer. So I think that that's just the nature of sometimes you're in the wrong building and you get booed, well, for just, not looking like you'd rather be anywhere else. And that is, of course, complete assumption on the part of the fans, but it's also part of the fun of sports, right? You would expect a Boston Bruin to get booed in Montreal. You'd expect a New York Ranger to get booed in Philly. So I guess now in this, at the top of the Atlantic Division has been the Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Bruins and the Florida Panthers for so long that there's, you know, there's some nastiness when it comes to those players. So I don't think it was really an incident. I just think that some people wanted to, you know, get all righteous about, well, fans shouldn't be booing and this and that. Other people took it in stride. And I think that Kucherov was one of the people that took it in stride. He knows he was in enemy territory, if you will. So I don't think it was as much as some people made of it.
Also, what happened over All-Star weekend is some really, really good news on the international hockey front. And that is, we found out that the NHLers will be returning to the Olympics for the next two Olympic cycles. At the very least, we know that they have missed the last two Olympics because they couldn't ratify a deal similar to this. So that is very exciting to see the NHLers go back to play internationally. And subsequently, they are bringing back the Four Nations Cup, which was a great retro head-to-head from back in the day. And I'm not sure how many Four Nations Cups they've initially agreed upon, but I'm very excited from a hockey fan perspective for both.
Yeah, it'll be good. I'm looking forward to seeing NHL stars back at the Olympics. I think the Four Nations Cup is a unique idea and something the NHL can market and grow the game with. So it'll be nice to see players playing in that environment again. It's fun to see players like Matthews and McDavid going against each other for country versus country. It's fun to see players like, you know, McDavid and Crosby and MacKinnon on the same team. Pick your nation of choice, pick your favorite players. It's just fun to see them on the same squad. And now we get to talk and debate about who should be on those teams and what those teams might look like a couple of years from now and all of that. So, really fun. And I think it's only positive for the game when these things get confirmed and we get to see these types of tournaments.
And the NHL returned with a couple of games last night, one of which was the Toronto Maple Leafs at home for their final game this year versus the New York Islanders and Lou Lamoriello, and for the first time against Patrick Waugh since returning five games ago as the new head coach of the New York Islanders. It was once again a very close game. I thought it was going to end up in overtime for the third straight game between these two teams this season, and alas, there was a late goal with just over 2 minutes to go by the New York Islanders to ultimately take the victory. What did you take away from their first game back from the break last night, if anything? Because I do believe, although Samsonov did not look quite as sharp as he did the games that he had just prior to the break, he did still look pretty solid in net.
Yeah, I thought the Leafs played well. I thought Keith put it correctly. They did enough, or they played well enough to win, but they made enough mistakes to lose. You know, and I think that it was just one of those games. I don't think you can be too disappointed. Some of the coverage, I think we've seen in front of the net, we know that the Leafs are looking for a little more grit in their top four, a player that can play in the top four. Who has that talent to be in the top four, but can also play a heavier game. You know, Tanev has been rumored, and pick any top four defenseman that's available right now coming up. So I think we're at a point now where we know what this Leafs team is. We know what they kind of need to add over the next month before the trade deadline. So we know there's work to do there, but I don't think that this was a terrible effort. I think that the Islanders are a team that's stifling to play against at times, and they obviously have that new coach boost, right? And you can see them playing with a little extra energy and a little extra oomph since the switch to Patrick Waugh,
right? And sticking with hockey, I want to get your thoughts. We know that the NHL does a great job, generally speaking, with their Winter Classic and Stadium Series every year since they announced it over a decade ago now, I believe it was. And it was just announced earlier today that the Blackhawks will host the Blues at Wrigley Field in the 2025 Winter Classic. We know that Wrigley Field is still one of the historic baseball stadiums in all of the world, with the legendary ivy on the wall, and it's just one of those places, very similarly to Fenway Park, where you go in there and you legit feel the legends pumping through there in some capacity, shape, or form. And I'm sure it'll be the same even for a hockey situation in the middle of winter, even though Chicago in the winter is absolutely brutal. What do you make of Chicago hosting a game at Wrigley Field?
Well, I mean, they're trying to put Connor Bedard in the spotlight. I sure hope that by the time this game is played next year, the Chicago Blackhawks aren't an ECHL team plus Connor Bedard, because that's kind of embarrassing. Like, they're terrible. They're absolutely atrocious. And part of that is because of all the injuries, including an injury to Bedard. So I would like to be more excited, because I do love these outdoor games, but I the Blues don't interest me very much right now. I think they're on the downswing as opposed to the upswing, and Chicago is just terrible. So to me, I'm less excited about this. However, it's hard to judge it, you know, almost a year away. Rosters change, teams change, situations change. There's lots that could happen between now and then, so I'll sort of save my judgment of the game itself, but I would say it's a little bit of a lackluster announcement from my, as a general hockey fan. Those are not two teams that get me particularly excited.
Switching to baseball, I just want to get your thoughts on something that has been developing over the last week and a half, 2 weeks especially. And we know that the Baltimore Orioles over the last couple of years have taken tremendous strides in the division and really shown how great their young core is, with Jackson Holliday coming up and Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman respectively being there as well as key young cornerstones for the last couple of years, after they were a dumpster fire for the vast majority of the 4 or 5 years prior to that. No question about it. We talked about it multiple times. But they just sold the team. A new billionaire came in, so they've had more money now than they've had in a number of years, if ever. And the new owner came in and said, we need to do something, and we need to do something right now. So in a very short span of time, relatively speaking, they've brought in veterans, Corbin Burnes from Milwaukee via trade, and then they got Blake Snell and J.D. Martinez, both veterans as well. Blake Snell, once again, was another name that you heard around the Blue Jays, and the Blue Jays not executing on, clearly. And he is coming off of a Cy Young candidate type of year for himself once again after having a rough year the year before. And J.D. Martinez, although he's going to be, I believe, 37 or 38 this year as a full-time DH, he can still rake the ball like nobody's business. We know that about him. So what do you make of the Orioles, specifically with their new ownership saying, okay, we're going to make a push here to get a good balance of veterans in with our young stars to make a push deeper into the playoffs this year? Because what they have done to offset the young core, like I said, now with some great veterans who have won World Series championships before, is tremendous.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we saw in the playoffs last year that as great a year as they had, it's hard when you haven't been there before, right? And so I think the idea of ownership, you're really buying into the idea of quote unquote going for it and trying to offset the clear talent that they have upcoming, and, you know, a lot of their prospects turning into legitimate major league players. You need to surround them with some guys that have been there before. I think that that's a recipe for success in any professional sport, and we see that oftentimes in baseball, right? You need more than one or two good players. You need something everywhere, right? Everywhere on the diamond, whether it's pitching, whether it's hitting, whether it's fielding, whatever, you need to have players at all of those spots, and having some Having some experience there can really help. So if I'm a fan, I would be thrilled to hear my owner talk about that, talk about, you know, bringing in assets that are needed to help the team get over the hump. And as a fan of a different team in the AL East, I hope that they fail.
Yes. And subsequently, on the other side of that coin, I want to get your thoughts. We know that the Kansas City Royals have been a dumpster fire largely since 2015, 2016, when they made their push back-to-back for World Series and those great teams seemingly out of nowhere. However, their young star, Bobby Witt Jr., signed an 11-year, $288.7 million contract to stay with Kansas City. Are you surprised at that at all? Because we know that sports cycles, and so we know that Kansas City, hopefully within that 11-year period of time, plus this year still on his previous deal, they will be similar to the Baltimore Orioles. Just all signs right now are not pointing to that whatsoever. So if I'm a young star, yes, do I want to be a part of a rebuild similar to the Baltimore Orioles that we just talked about? Absolutely, of course. But there's no way right now I would be enticed to sign an 11-year, $288.7 million contract when I'm 23 years old in Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, the contracts are barely worth the paper they're printed on. You know, if he doesn't want to be there, they'll find a way out. If things don't go the way he expects them to go, obviously, you know, the team thinks that he's part of the solution there, and he is buying into whatever they're selling as far as what the, you know, what the rebuild's going to look like, what those 11 years could be. But let's be real, in 3 years, if it sucks and he doesn't want to be there, he'll find a way out. That's just pro sports now.
Okay. And last but certainly not least, is there anything that we haven't covered on this Tuesday, February 6th, 2024 edition of the Isolation Series that we should?
I think that's we jam-packed. Lots of fun things to chat about today. And, you know, we'll definitely have more Super Bowl content as the week moves on, but not a whole lot of note from media day yesterday. I'll be excited when we're talking about the game and when we see what the odds look like, you know, closer to Sunday's big game.
Just one thing about media day though, that I do want to mention is it had very much WWE feels to it at a couple of different points, from Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes, respectively, because the Niners fans definitely made the short flight from San Francisco and the Bay Area over to Las Vegas and Allegiant Stadium. Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, anytime that they tried to talk on the main stage last night, were getting booed like The Rock did over the last couple of days. And they were just like, we hear you, we hear you, keep bringing it, keep bringing it. So I thought that that was very, very humorous and interesting at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's the Batman quote? You know, either leave the hero or stick around long enough to be considered the villain. And that's probably the era of Kansas City Chiefs that we are living in right now. So, yeah, I mean, it certainly made me chuckle. But, you know, these media days, there's not a whole lot to them, really. We'll start to get into the meat of the matter later on this week.
Absolutely. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. This has been your Tuesday, February 6th, 2024 edition of the Isolation Series. And as always, we appreciate you watching and or listening wherever it is that you're doing so. And we appreciate our sponsors, without whom we wouldn't be able to do this as often as we do. But until we come at you again later in the week with some more Super Bowl talk, as well as catch up on anything else pertinent in entertainment, politics, and or sports, take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.